when something is well designed, it will last forever.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Paid to Draw. I'm one of your hosts, David Leutert. You can call me Dave, and I'm an illustrator and lettering artist based here in Berlin. With me here is my co-host Vicky, who just got back from tour with her band. Thanks for making time in your busy rock and roll schedule to host this humble little podcast project here with me. Hi, Vicky.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for the introduction. I didn't have a weekend, so this is kind of rough. That's the rock and roll life, is that you don't have a weekend and you suffer all week.
Sounds great.
My name is Victoria Chihun. I'm also an illustrator, also from Berlin. And today with us is our wonderful guest, Abraham Lule. He was born and raised in Mexico. Abraham describes his body of illustration, typography, and packaging work as design with a human touch. His spectrum of skills is flexible and ever-changing, bringing a truly unique crafted flair that is undeniable in his work. He has worked for clients such as Facebook, Capitol Records, and José Cuervo. He is also a Typography Excellence Medalist, and the Type Directors Club recently chose him to be an Ascender. All the way from New York City, Abraham Lule.
Yay! Hi, Abraham. So good to have you. We clap on this podcast after a guest gets introduced.
I love clapping. Thank you for the introduction and thank you for having me here.
Thank you for coming. Let's cut right to the chase. You were born and now you're here. Fill us in on what happened in between.
Oh my God.
How did you become a successful freelance designer? What happened there?
It's a kind of story of like, kid learning how to draw, using it as a hobby, turning into a professional career. That's pretty much the case. I was always that curious kid that wasn't chosen first at soccer, in the soccer team. So, but I will do the poster for the event, or I will do, I will bring my coloring book and my crayons to draw in the middle of the match or in practices. And then that, I guess, just developed into nurturing more of that just naturally. And when I had to have the chance to choose my career path, it was very clear that it was to be something related to the arts and related to either drawing or just something creative. That I have to say that when I need to stop myself with having to use creativity just for something that needs to be like an art or drawn art form, because I feel like you can be creative even if you are a lawyer or a doctor or a chef. Like, we're all creative because we're all humans, and that's part of who we are. But it was really clear since I was younger that it would be something related to me having a pencil in a hand and a piece of paper in front of me. And for years, I think I just made up stories of, and I have this memory, like it's very clear, sitting at my grandmother's kitchen table. We're all around, as a Mexican family, around a Coca-Cola, 2 liters bottle of Coca-Cola. And I remember telling them like, the person who drew this logo is being paid by the bottle. So can you imagine how much money this person is making? And and I was like, maybe I was 13 years old. I figured out like what a logo was. I don't even remember from where. And that was my subtle way to tell them like, I want to be a graphic designer in an area where I didn't know what a graphic designer was really. And that evolved to me starting advertising. I started advertising in Argentina right after high school. And then I went back to Mexico to pursue my career in advertising. And later I realized that, I don't know, it didn't feel like a good fit. And also money wasn't abundant. We were a poor family. My mom got a job at university. And in order for me to keep learning and having a degree, a college degree, one of the benefits of her job was for me to have a scholarship. And she was like, the only thing is that they don't have advertising. They have graphic design.
Oh, okay.
And you might need to start from scratch. And I didn't really have another option. So I just did that. And I feel like because I left a lot of years of, I was studying advertising, of course, and but I wasn't employed. I was just kind of like up in the air. All of my people from my generation, they were already working when I started from first class in graphic design. And I guess that also informed my commitment with the profession and my interest in graphic design. I was really involved. I didn't want to not waste my time anymore. Like, I was committed to just keep learning and educate myself outside my college education. Like, I became like more of a nerd and reading and learning and practicing. And I actually got my first job in graphic design in my first semester. And that also was very beneficial because I had to have a job, a real job in graphic design. At the same time, I was studying graphic design. Right. And I think like since then, I haven't stopped working.
Cool. That's a great story. Who are some of your design influences, if I may ask?
The work of Louise Philly is very close to me.
She's great.
Her aesthetic and also her approach in design and the detail and the storytelling and the craft and the way she conveys the art form of design with commercial arts. I think it's very neat and it's very well explained and I think it's beautiful the practice that she's been nurturing for
definitely.
Years. But aside, I feel like many, like I always wanted to be Saul Bass, like and work for the film industry. I also wanted to be Massimo Vignelli and being clean and thorough with design choices and not use ornament of or complications to design Milton Glaser and Lance Wyman with all the branding that he did for the Olympic Games in Mexico had huge impact in the country. And I think like, yeah, it's a combination of all of them.
Okay.
Those were the people that I was studying and I was learning from when I was in college.
I think I can definitely tell just by looking at your work that some of those people are your influences. And I did recognize most of those names. I gotta be honest, that Lance person, never heard of him, and Massimo Vignelli, I've heard of the name, but all graphic designers will want to see me burning at the stake for asking this, but what exactly did Massimo Vignelli do? what was his work like?
Well, that's, basically it's one of the most famous systems is the New York subway system.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He was the one who came up with even how the map is.
Right.
And interestingly enough, is the map that we use nowadays is the same map that he designed, has been tweaked a little bit, but is the exact system.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about that approach is that it proves longevity in design, which is one of the things that I'm more interested in right now. When something is well designed, it will last forever.
Yes.
And that was his approach. And I mean, the subway here in New York is a living proof that he did a great job.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and one of the few examples where Helvetica is actually acceptable.
Controversial.
and it's also like, talking about Lance Wyman did the subway system, the graphic design, like the graphic system for Mexico City.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So both of them have done kind of the same project in different cities and they both work. It's just very beautiful and it's still in use in both cities.
Mm-hmm.
like these are systems that have been around for maybe over 40 years or 50 years.
Cool.
I was looking up your work online, and on Instagram you share little breakdown videos of your designs, which I absolutely love, because process videos of any kind are so interesting, especially to break down your design. And also I love when you share your sketches, because they are a little, they're rough, they're not super neat, but the end product is like, it's so perfect. But I really love to see all these drawings and sketches you have, because on this podcast, obviously it's called Pay to Draw, so we're really interested in the drawing part of it. Could you walk us through your creative process from start to finish? How do you develop ideas and visualize them, digitize them, and finally get them to live on the product?
Yeah, I mean, I have to start by saying that when I am often asked about my process, I get a little shy, because in the past I gave answers that sounded good to me or professional, and then I realized that I don't really follow that process like quite accurately. It really depends on the project, but if I have to have something in between that, all these processes that I do share is certainly the use of pencil and paper. To me, drawing is rendering your thoughts, rendering your imagination. And ultimately, when you work in a computer, it's what oils the machine. Just taking that information outside your brain and have a doodle, as you mentioned, like my sketching is quite rough. I just want to have like a overall sense of the composition or the idea. And once that is on paper, it's easier for me to go to the computer and know what I'm going to draw. So that's kind of the process. But before all this, it starts with having something in my head. I need to see it first. I need to see it inside my head first.
Okay.
And even it could happen even if when I'm talking with a client, if they are giving me the brief, and most of the times it sparks something in my head, and I already have the idea of what I'm going to do. Like and that happens almost immediately. That for me is like in between being excited of something and also being functional. Like you are fully immersed, and kind of for the years that I've been doing this, it's kind of like I am ready to have those ideas already in my head, and that experience. And also like a bit more of like being open for your imagination. And once that's there, then I go and do a drawing, like a doodle, or at least like notes about what I want to do. I start looking for references, and not visual references, but maybe our stories are around this topic. And I get like put it all together. And then I basically present the concept to the client first of what I'm trying to do. That is something that they all share, because really in packaging, like packaging, branding, illustration, they share things, but they are not the same. And I think like that's important for me to differentiate when I'm working in my process. The packaging process is not close. It is not even the same that I do when I do illustration or lettering. Lettering is actually very different. With lettering, I draw the letters first on paper without seeing anything else. I want to get excited about the shape of the letters and how the composition is going to be and what is this going to communicate. And that's not something that I do when I work in packaging.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you sketch the letters out, or do you do sign paint them, or like use a brush or something?
Yeah, that's also like part of the process. If it's lettering, and to me lettering is having an illustration made of letters basically. And what I want to communicate in my work is what makes this letter different from others. I want to have my pieces to have some sort of authenticity or level of recognition that others can see and can be like, oh, this is interesting. Oh, I haven't seen this letter shape. And mm-hmm. I think that only happens if you are willing to make accidents in your work, mm-hmm. which yes. often happens when you are using different tools. Like I'll use now a pencil and I'll quickly doodle something, or I'll use like a dry brush and I'll do it quickly on this piece of paper. And once you're seeing these accidents, you start feeling like, oh, this shape is very interesting. And that can only happen if you are excited about it, mm-hmm. if you are not thinking of the practicalities or the technicalities of lettering, mm-hmm. that could happen if you are just showing your excitement about doing something. And even color, like I love color red, so most of my sketches in lettering are with red, mm-hmm. And I just have a range of different hues of red, and that's what I do. Like now this one, and then another one, and I just like to have a lot. And then I see the pieces that I like, and then I put it all together.
Interesting. Yeah, red. The red sketches or the papers I saw that you shared. They got me really excited.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's it.
I can understand how you get excited when you paint in red, and it's like yes. This looks awesome.
Yeah. Because I feel like, well, you know, in lettering, like sometimes you'll see the use of color until the very end. And that's also the way I design. Once that excitement is there, then I go to the technicalities of the lettering. Mm-hmm. Like I go to the nitty gritty of how the structure is and the negative space and all these technical parts of the lettering. So I do all that process in black and white. And I don't apply color into the very end. And I think that I've seen that it works in my work. Like once you can see the excitement of the piece in black and white, then you know for sure that this is going to work. Like it doesn't matter in which materials or applications, if it's printed or if it's on screen or if it's with color or not, it's going to work. Mm-hmm. And that's also what I'm looking for in my work. That it functions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Your approach to practice really, really shows in your work, because you're like, I always try to avoid failure in a way, or let's say I try out a sketch and then I kind of refine that one sketch over and over until I kind of get there, but within the same document, let's say digitally, whereas you just kind of like go ahead and just, you know, use a paintbrush and just write the same word over and over and over until it looks right. And I remember the first time I met you, we were taking this 4-day sign painting workshop with Mike Meyer at the old Colossal Media headquarters mm-hmm. in Brooklyn before they moved from Williamsburg to Bushwick. But I noticed you right away, because you just were just so eager to paint letters. I remember getting there and you were, each day you were always one of the first people to be there, or at least it seemed like it to me. I think I was always late. But you didn't bother just chit-chatting with people. You were just sitting, you were just standing by your easel or by your wall and just painting away. And by the time the first people showed up, you had already painted an entire alphabet. You know, you just really wanted to learn. And I don't know. I think we didn't really talk until the last day of the workshop, but I've always been kind of drawn to the quiet ones for somehow. I don't know. We've gone to several workshops together, and then sometimes there's people who kind of go for the likes and the followers and the kind of like the networking aspect, and you just really, really want to learn. So I guess my question is, how have traditional sign painting techniques informed your approach to typographic design?
Yeah, I feel like, for years, I've been looking for someone who can teach me mm-hmm. Sign painting. I think there's something that is very kind of magical and kind of rare. I see it like a rare and fine kind of craft. Mm-hmm. It is old, but it is not dated. It is yes. very humbling. Mm-hmm. It is. It takes a lot of patience. It is physical. It requires someone's attention, and it's also something that can be done, quote unquote, in a fast speed mm-hmm. for people that are like masters.
One
which is
shot.
also crazy. And yeah, for years I was looking for someone that could teach me. And when I started getting into more of sand painting, even when I was in Mexico, I feel like the way that you're facing the wall and the way that you need to learn how to do layouts and to differentiate how different letter forms work together and being mindful of the communication and the motion of the piece, that is something that is so valuable because then when you are in front of the computer, you have all that information in your head and it won't be the same that you designed before and after you learn how to sign paint because you sort of seeing things differently. Again, like goes back into the sketching, goes back into knowing what you're going to do. Like I think those are very important things, like really being intentional with your design choices. And when you are going to paint a wall or someone's storefront, you better know what you're doing because this is not going to be like a control Z. This is going to be there. And if you are messing it up, it's going to be like paint it all again and doing it again, again, again. You don't want to do that. So I think is that I see it as a almost like the I'd say it is not the enemy, but it's like the nemesis. It's like the nemesis of digital. Where in a way that you have the possibilities of going control C and having all these colors and changing them like as you please, on the other side, you need to be very thorough and very practical at what you're going to do before you start. And when you see these two, to me, what has happening is that in one way, working in the digital format, I have maybe more information in my head about colors and how I want to structure things and what are the effects that I want to do on something that is sign painting. And when I go to use a computer, I'm very mindful of my layout or the composition. For instance, in sign painting, I think the format informs what is going to happen inside. If it's something that is portrait, the letters are going to be maybe slightly more expanded. Or they're gonna if the word is longer, letters are gonna be condensed. And then when you're in the computer, we have so many formats that to me I start with format first, and then the format will inform the kind of letter shapes that I need. I think that's the way like I see the in between, like is almost like a bridge between the two. But in all fairness, I think like also. To me, working in front of a wall or like an easel or not being paying attention to the computer makes me feel calmer.
It's very therapeutic, isn't it?
Yes. And it's almost like because it's so physical, your brain is really focusing on like getting straight or like what is the style that you're doing. Whereas on the computer might not be the case. You actually are maybe creating your options in a way or piecing it together. And because again, you can change it at any time, then it's more of a design choice than a craft of a practice in a way.
I'm actually curious to hear about the combination of both of those, because I know you created an entire typeface based on a classic sign writer's block letter alphabet for Jose Cuervo. How did that come about and how did you, because I'm sure you must have started out painting each letter by hand, right? You didn't go straight into Adobe Illustrator.
No, actually, I didn't use. Well, I used Illustrator at the very beginning just to have a sense of the X body of the type that I wanted to do. But for Jose Cuervo, there were six different fonts with two or three weights each.
Oh, okay.
And all of them needed to be hand painted. So I actually did sign painting. I hand painted all of the letters first.
Wow.
Sounds exhausting.
And again, like if you have, but we don't really like the X or we don't really think that the Y, like it is not as easy to change as if you have it just computer. And they really wanted to show the texture. So it wasn't not just about painting them, but how to translate the texture of fresh quote unquote fresh paint or wet paint to the screen.
Yes.
So the process was that I first painted, like, I did plenty, like round the shoulders, scripts, cursives, block letters, gothics, rounded, like one line rounded, like I did six, but and then some of them needed to have like a shadow or an emboss, and I needed to sign paint all of that. What I did is, again, like I did all that sign painting first, and then I translated those letters to the computer by scanning them, and then photoshopping to get through, like, to really see the texture and have the right balance of the brush stroke and the transparency, which then those letters got translated into the software. And Ben Keel, who did an amazing job creating the fonts and turning to software, work on the kerning and the glyphs and, and all what implies to have it for someone to type, which I think was fantastic. And you can use that font, and it works perfectly.
How cool.
Sadly, is not public, because it's just for the client and internal communication. I mean, the communication that they have with across, like, worldwide, as an asset. But yeah, it is. It was a really interesting project that it actually was done during the pandemic. So during lockdown, that's what I was doing.
I can see you're in your studio. You're full of your letters everywhere.
back in the day, I actually didn't have the studio, because I was just in the apartment. So you can picture the living room full of letters, and they, by the way, they were red. So they were all these red acetates with white letters. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I think it's really interesting how you said that sign painting is so physical, and compared to working on the computer, how it takes you out of it. And speaking of physical, you used to be a dance teacher and choreographer. Is that right?
That's correct.
I read in your type director's interview that your experience has taught you about the importance of curiosity, persistence, self-criticism, observation, and dedication. Yeah, do you see any similarities between creating letter forms or designs and dance choreographies?
Yeah, there are certainly similarities, but I guess to me, what that did is the work of a dancer to become a dancer, there's no shortcuts. It really takes time. And once again, like with the use of technology, I think that has normalized that things could get done fast or faster, and that your success could get faster too. Like, you can skip the line and just being successful. And dance, by doing these two practices at the same time, it's just like being persistent, like having like the stamina to, yeah, your stamina to do what you do, like what you are passionate of. And I also feel like dancers have, because of all the physicality, like there's no such job as you being dancing and checking on your phone or being dancing and multitasking. Like, you really need to be present. You might act, sing, and dance, but yet it is an art form that you need to be on your feet. Like, you need to know how to balance. You need to be an athlete who can also, who is also a performer. And like, you do all this heavy lifting while you expressing love and expressing joy or whatever the piece is requiring. But on that publication from the Type Directors Club, what I was mentioning too is that when I was a dance teacher, when I was the coach of this competition team, I learned a lot about all these, the struggles of a dancer and how to be persistent. That, of course, made me feel that I had to practice that when I was designing. And it happened at the same time that I was starting to graphic design too. So that's why maybe from the memory that you have, Dave, of me in the sign painting class, well, you could see it there. Like,
yes.
And sometimes I can come across like not the nicest person
really?
In the room. Might not be, but because maybe is that kind of mindset that I don't really want to waste anyone's time or my time. I'm there because I want to learn, and I want to really squeeze as much as I can of this time. And that is something that I also recognize that it is because my dance experience. When you are in the room and you have 2 hours to get a piece done, you need to be present. You don't need to waste time or anyone's time. You might be even rehearsing in a studio that costs already $1,000, and you don't want to just be like, let's just talk about our lives. Like, we're here to do something. We have a goal. We are all committed. I didn't realize how much dance impacted my career as a designer until I stopped doing it. When I moved to New York permanently to work at a studio is when I left the dance academy. I basically just left everyone, my dance life there. And I wanted to just dedicate myself to being a designer. And then I realized, no, well, you miss it. You miss it because you are so used to it that I had this swing of worlds of you go to design and you are focusing on this, but then you have the experience of dancing and also be creative. When I was a dance teacher, I was also, because I was working with the competition team, basically I was designing everything. I was even doing the music. So I was doing the costumes, I was doing the music, I was doing the concept of the dance piece, I was choreographing it, I was teaching them how to dance. Sometimes I even did their makeup. I'll do the makeup on all of them. And then you need to learn how to do makeup on 18 dancers. And that is what I also mean with, it taught me so much, and I was so free creatively that it will be like, now we're going to wear yellow and black, and now the logo is going to be this one, and now it's going to be this. And because I was the director, and it was my business too, I had the possibility to just do whatever I wanted. And that was amazing. And later I did like photo shoots with them, and I did campaigns for them. And that really was like what helped me to be more creative in my work.
Amazing.
And also more portfolio.
When I met you, you were still working in-house as an associate design director at Vault 49, which is one of the few places in the city where illustrators can actually find in-house gigs. I think I visited like once or twice, and I was just so blown away because it was just a room full of people drawing. You know, at first maybe on their Wacom Cintiqs, and then later on their iPads, but usually all of those people are at home, at their individual homes. Most people who draw for a living don't get to be in a studio setting like that. I always found that cool. I'm more curious to hear, you know, what was your transition like when you decided to take the leap into going freelance full time? Because it must have been really difficult leaving the comfort of a quote unquote real job behind and facing the uncertainty of working for yourself, especially in a place that's as expensive as New York, and you know, just having to do it all by yourself all of a sudden. And you're currently on an O-1 artist visa, right? Because that introduces a whole nother layer of anxiety when your you know, resident status isn't kind of based on your employer as a sponsor.
Yeah, that is very true. And I feel like you know this from firsthand.
Oh, yeah, it's an absolute nightmare. I just want to hear your experience.
Well, first off, the transition from working at an office to being an independent artist or being an independent designer is something that I have always done freelance in a way. Not when I was at Vault 49, but I was always doing personal projects. I was always using or finding the time to do my own work. And that's actually like having the sign painting class started when I was at Vault. Like it was during that time. So it has always been important for me to have personal project or a hobby where I can just design as I please. So when I left the company, I was sure that I wanted to just spend more time doing my design work, that I just wanted to be independent.
Yes.
And so the transition was pretty easy. Like once I got my O1, I already had lined up projects.
Oh,
and
cool.
Yeah, and it was around the same time that I applied to the Ascenders. I started getting more recognition here in the city too. And I always felt that I wasn't alone. The design community, in a way, it is well connected and we support each other as much as we can. And I knew that it was going to be the case, or at least I that's what I wanted to believe. And it worked. It worked out. So yeah, I didn't. To me, all these things of like, yeah, you're gonna miss your health insurance, and you're gonna not be on a W-2, and all what that implies. I really didn't think of that.
Okay.
I want to think of how I'm gonna use my time now.
Yes.
And just, I always believe in that kind of approach. Like if you do things with that perspective of like, just do your best right now, it always pays back. And that was really the case. That's all what I did. Also not being too focused on, oh no, but if I don't do A and B, it's not going to be C. Like, no, it just needs to come from within. Like, you just need to put it out there and show that you are a talented designer and hang out with the right people, and everything is going to be okay. And I think that has been the case.
I would say so.
A big part of putting yourself out there is definitely your portfolio. And yours in particular is... it's amazing. It's so high end. And I want to know more about it. How do you consistently ensure such high production value with your packaging work and also just presenting your work in general?
Yeah, I think it is goes back again to the experience that I had at the dance studio, in a way. Like when you learn to involve other people that are good at what they do, and that is going to be reflected in your own work. In this case, photographers. That they will really make your work shine and give a different perspective. And when I do all my packaging work, most of it has been photographed by my now kind of partner in crime, Francisco de Duz, who is a Brazilian photographer here in the city. And it was very humbling from him that he actually accepted to work for me because he works with such high end clients, and we did a project first, and I loved working with him. Again, like, you can see how detail oriented he is, that I was like, I am in great hands. This is going to look just great. And
absolutely,
that was the case. The first project that we did was the gin, like a Gracias a Dios gin, which I knew that it was a really good design. I'm really proud of that, of all those labels. And I wanted to have a photographer that could put it into, like, bring it to the next level.
Yeah.
And I've been working with him for so many projects. And each time I do like an art direction first, I again sketch everything like scene by scene.
Oh, really?
All that is, I mean, at some point I should do a portfolio of all those case studies.
Yes.
Just like behind the scenes. And because everything is planned with a lot of anticipation, which is another job, really.
Absolutely.
And I give him like, what is the look and feel, the lighting is going to be like. We buy the props. If we need to produce something for the photo shoot, we do it. And then we just photograph it together. I'm always with him at the studio, just to be sure that everything is is going well, but also is where these kind of accidents happen and we start getting more excited about the photo shoot and it's like, what about this? And it always turns out that it's like one of our favorite photos. these kind of unplanned situations.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, it has become really important for me to keep doing that, because in a way I can see how this could translate into having more job opportunities too. I can art direct someone's photo shoot as well.
Oh, yeah.
I can be doing it for other people. So he's not showing you that I can do packaging, but he's also showing you that I am able to work with a photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And I can be in charge of a campaign or something like that. And it's also so much fun. I enjoy it so much. And really that to me is like, what is the final thing to say that the project has been finalized. The project is done until that case study is out.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time.
That's super interesting, because all of the designers I know neglect that part of like the presentation part. It's usually they use a mock-up, and myself included, I'm very lazy when it comes to that. Also, like my work is, a lot of it is digital anyway. But yeah, it's so inspiring how you dedicate so much time and effort into the presentation. Because yeah, it's true. It is a whole thing. It's like art direction for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Phil is also finding the right person to do it. I have, of course, I have worked with other photographers that I don't particularly use that much.
Yeah.
But with Francisco, we have created this fellowship and understanding of each other's work and value. That once again, I feel like having someone that adds up to your work is so important. And I think in a way he sees it in that way too. He recently told me like, oh my God, with all the project that we have done, I want to just have a portfolio that is for beverages because we have done so much that he now has a portfolio that is full of
packaging. Here's my mezcal portfolio.
Yeah. And I'm glad that he mentioned it, because that tells you that there is, you know, that there is some reciprocity, if that's a word, that is mutual. And we both see the value in each other.
Cool. Yeah, that's so cool. I've noticed that about you too, is you just always go the extra mile, and I think it pays off. You know, your packaging work for Gracias a Dios gin is just such a great example of just following through and making sure every aspect of a project is diligently done by hand. You know, if you look at those labels, I want to say 80% of the design is drawn by hand, you know, down to the very, you know, smallest detail, and then presented in the best possible way. And I'm similar, you know, once a project is wrapped up and you send the client deliverables and you hand in the invoice, you get paid, it's done. And then maybe it gets published like a half a year later and you put it on your Instagram. Maybe you can find the time to kind of create a bit of a case study and put it on Behance. But I'm like Vicky, I usually just do mockups because it's easier. But I feel like, I don't know if it's something you can quantify, but would you say from your experience, has it actually paid off? Because we can all agree that it just, the way you present your work looks cooler than that we do it. But does it actively turn into more jobs for you? Or do people hire you based on, you know, how, well, it's kind of hard to say, isn't it? Because, I mean, they wouldn't really hire you for how the pictures were taken, for that, the fact that you didn't use a phone.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I think it does. It pays back. And here is an example. That gym project, I submitted it to the Tiberius Club when I first launched it, but not the one with the photos.
Okay.
The deadline was there, and I was like, oh my God, I need to do this. And I knew the design was great. So I took photos with my own camera. I submitted it and I didn't win.
Oh,
I didn't win a thing. Not even a finalist. Nothing. That same project got submitted to other packaging competitions and I won them all.
And with the same project?
With same project, now with Francisco's photos.
Okay.
And talking about competitions, very important for me because I am an O1 visa immigrant here in this country, and having those awards just support my visa case.
Yes.
So if you piece it all together, you can see that there is a value in how you feature your work.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
even mm-hmm. and even as an independent designer, I do want to be considered to work for all sorts of clients, and that people can see immediately that there is quality here, mm-hmm. not just in the design, but in the presentation. Mm-hmm. There needs to be something there that tells you, oh, the quality here is different. Let me see. And then I feel like ultimately, even if it's just one client, that will also have a foundation on what's the value, like monetary value of the project. Mm-hmm. Like eventually you're going to be able to charge a bit more because the quality is so obvious mm-hmm. that yeah. that is undeniable that this is the right price. I really wanted to have that differentiation of me being an independent designer that works at the level of a design agency. Mm-hmm. That can be competitive with design agencies through the work.
Right.
So that's why I also have done it. And eventually turn into really just tell more of the storytelling behind the projects. Mm-hmm. We have a project that is called Sonora that is all red. Mm-hmm. And I was so invested in getting it right because I really wanted to have the right tone of voice for the photos. Mm-hmm. That ultimately, because I'm not in Australia and this restaurant is in Australia, I didn't have the chance to photograph in inside, but I wanted to communicate what's the concept of this restaurant through the photos. Mm-hmm. So that was also really helpful too.
Cool. In an interview with the Type Directors Club, you said, if I could compare my day of work to working at a restaurant, at any given moment, I can be the chef or the waiter or the sous chef or the delivery service or all of them in less than 2 hours. It can be quite hectic, but that is also what makes it exciting. I just love that analogy. I mean, this was back when you were working at Vault 49, but would you say that that's still the case now that you're self-employed? Do you still wear as many different hats?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'll be curious to hear if there are any other designers or illustrators or lettering artists that feel the same, but that's how I felt. That's how I felt at Vault 49, and that's how I feel right now too. Mm-hmm. Perhaps in a smaller scale right now. But when I was at World 49, regardless of my level, of my position in the hierarchy, I was doing it all, and I feel like everyone was too. Like mm-hmm. you sometimes are just doing one letter, and sometimes you're in charge of the whole presentation deck, and sometimes you are doing the concepts, and you sometimes are by running the project yourself, mm-hmm. Or sometimes you will be like just helping others to do their job. Like it will change so much. Mm-hmm. Perhaps that happens more on an agency level than for an independent artist. Right now, I feel like, as I said, like is less so than what it was. But I guess these many hats go more into now we need to have a conversation about budget. Now we have a conversation about the concept. Now, I don't know, like many conversations, maybe it is the same hectiness, but different level. One thing that I've seen now that I've been just independent is my work, at least the first round, is always presented in person. Mm-hmm. Okay. And when I run the project with a client, you also start feeling like, okay, now I'm wearing a different hat. Now I am the storyteller. Mm-hmm. Now I am telling you the designed, what are the design solutions here? And then you'll be the one who is doing the craft as well. Mm-hmm. I think that, again, like there are many hats in one person, which I think is also what makes the work different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is there a hat you don't like to wear?
The finance hat is always hard to use.
Yeah.
The contract, kind of the lawyer kind of hat.
Yeah.
it's not a fun one.
Yeah, the collecting payments hat.
Yeah, the collecting payments. The person who is like, hey, you need to pay. Mm-hmm. But I actually, working with Closer and Closer, of course, it helps. And it mm-hmm. is one of the values of having an agent. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I also do it with many other clients that I have. So it is not the regular. Like, I have to say that I have really good clients. I always pay on time. I think also with experience, you become better at it, a bit more natural. Also, I love overseeing my production in printing because most of my work needs to be printed. And that is a tough one to wear. It is one that I cannot take off. That is heavy. That one is heavy because it needs to be so precise, and there's a lot of money involved that you don't want to mess it up.
Yeah, but generally, it sounds really exciting. I think that's what a freelancer, the appeal of being a freelancer is also to do different kinds of things and also presenting your work, doing the work, coming up with ideas, all of it. I think in one of our interviews with Eugenia Mielo, she said that she always makes presentations. So whenever she gets a client, she starts with a presentation and putting together everything she can do for the client. I've started to do that as well. Like, it's also
So
fun because it
nice.
reminds you of your value, and then you get a confidence boost because you think like, yeah, it looks pretty good. I like it.
I'll borrow that too.
But I mean, you're presenting in person, which is adding a little bit of stress to, I don't know, to me at least as an introverted designer.
Oh
It's like
yeah,
a
yeah, and
nerve to
I feel like
present.
I'm an introverted person too, and I feel like, but it also goes into what other skills are you bringing to your craft when you are able to verbalize what your work is about or what the project is about, what your this design or illustration decisions were when you were crafting it. I think it just makes it different, like the way that people sees it. I always took for granted that that's what we should be doing. So I never thought of like, oh, can I just send a JPEG of this? Until another friend told me like, oh, I would just send a JPEG. And that's it. I was like, oh, really? And my presentations are, yeah, they're not, it's not that they're lengthy, but they have a breakdown of everything, like a brief kind of thing. And then like, if I'm working packaging or branding, I have different stories. So I actually write a story, like a storyteller, like where this coming from, like what is the ambience, the atmosphere, and how I imagine it. Or yeah, then it can be more complicated than just sending a JPEG. And again, it's because I want to be at the same competitive level as a design agency, basically.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Could you see yourself ever getting help for these kinds of tasks? Just having people, I don't know, just help you with presentation decks and stuff. You know, do you see yourself expanding or maybe opening up your own studio at some point? Is that something, or are you fine just doing all of this by yourself for eternity?
No, definitely. I will need help. I need help. This is not a one-man job. Especially like things are go for branding and packaging, you need more people. It's always a collaborative process. And I would love to have at least one more person that helps me out with taking some of things out of my plate. Especially when things get into like hectic, like 8 projects at a time, and you need to have, I don't know, 5 different packaging solutions, you eventually start repeating yourself. Like, it is just one person. And then most of the time you need to have at least 2 options per project. How is that you're gonna have amazing design solutions 16 times in less than a month, and presenting and putting all together? I think it's a lot of responsibility. So I would love to have someone that could be potentially like wants to dedicate their talent and time to something that we could do together. And the challenge there is that really finding the right person, right? Like someone that
Yeah,
could
of
be,
course.
as I don't know, I am a dedicated person, so I would love to have a person who is dedicated to the craft that
Yes.
can think not the same as I think, but can have the same values in the work, or they can see the same values in the work and the practice. But yeah, that will happen at some point, and it gets me very excited, and also I'm terrified. But it will happen at some point, yeah.
Yeah.
That was also part of having the studio now, like having a physical space that having another desk behind me to that I can start picturing someone working here.
Oh, okay.
Cool. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Abraham is actively looking for a design assistant as of right now. I don't know if that's
not
true.
A lie.
Okay.
That is not a lie.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, if anything resonated with our listeners, if they're as dedicated and focused as you, maybe they got excited. So
yeah, I mean, I recently actually got like an application, this person was asking me to work for me from the distance, which is something that of course, I feel like nowadays is just being open about it. Like that's the way we live. Yeah. But I would love to work with someone at least once a week in person. You know,
it
is such a tangible thing working in packaging that even seeing textures. I have here like full of plenty of bottles and different shapes. That's also the way I work. That having someone that is not going to be doing that process, it feels off. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe right now, maybe I'm waiting for the time to just ease out or just get calmer with the virus and people feel like is more willing to have like a one-on-one job. But yeah, very exciting. Thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah, I mean, you're in New York City. It shouldn't be that hard. Like, it's not like you're in the countryside and people say, I'm not going to move there.
Right.
Exciting city.
It is true. It is very exciting.
All right. I think we're at the end. Do you want to say something?
It was so
else?
Much fun. No. I am sad that this is getting to the end.
It was so interesting. I'm really in awe. Like, because I think I'm a different kind of designer. So I'm like, wow, I could really work so much harder.
Well, thank you, but also
I hope my clients don't hear that. I do work hard.
No, and that's also what I wanted to say. I feel like we all have different level, like different kinds of working hard.
Yeah.
In a way, and this is something that I also have been outspoken about. At some moments, I wish I just had one thing, you know, like being an illustrator and being amazing at illustration, and you maybe have different kind of challenges. I feel like because I have decided to do all this range of lettering and packaging and branding and illustration, sometimes my life gets too complicated in a way that maybe shouldn't be the case. So I wish, like, can I just be just one illustrator and be a dedicated illustrator to just work on this? Maybe that's the way. But
come on, you would get bored.
Yeah, that would get so boring for you.
Well, you never know. You never know. Listen,
yeah,
like
okay.
I feel like I've also been thinking of this recently, that many people have changed careers in their lives, you know, and I have never thought of that myself. But when I see the spectrum of what I've done since I remember of dancing and designing and illustrating, it doesn't sound like a strange idea to me that perhaps one day I'll just try to do one thing.
Okay.
I love sign painting so much. Why not to dedicate myself 1 year or 2 years of just doing that and see what happens?
Yeah.
Or what if I just go back to my dance life? That fulfills me so much too. And I just do that and I do it great. So that's also what I was considering. I feel like we all have different needs in ourselves, like creatively, and we should listen to those and then just follow. And I guess my wish is that then you have the best out of it, and it will fulfill you. And if you want to go back to what you were doing, then you just do it. You have done it. But yeah.
Absolutely. Inspiring last words. All right. We'd like to give our listeners also an opportunity to actually see your beautiful work. Where can people find you online?
Yes. So the website is abrahamlule.com. Abraham as Abraham is, LULE.com. And the other website is workbylule, LULE.com as well. Behance at ALULE. Instagram, Abraham Lule, or if you just Google Abraham Lule, maybe everything is already there, and that makes things easier.
Great. Cool. That's pretty straightforward. Well, thanks everyone for tuning into this episode. That concludes our very first season of Paid to Draw, actually. And I think it's been really fun so far. I really love getting to talk to all these professional artists and picking their brains about, you know, how they manage to get paid doing what they love. The first 8 conversations we've had have all been really interesting, I think. I always felt like I was able to take something away from them, or at least I never felt dumber afterwards, you know. They were all fine. But if you... they were just fine.
This one was exceptionally good.
Yes, I agree. I agree.
Thank you.
This was the only good one so far. No, I'm kidding. They were all amazing. To our listeners, if you have any thoughts, advice, or constructive criticism, feel free to slide into our DMs or send us an email to paid2drawpodcast@gmail.com. We're still new to this whole thing and we have a lot to learn, but we're always open to hearing your thoughts on how we can improve. After all, this is a community service. Just please be nice about it, you know? If you don't like our voices, if you think our accents are dumb or you think we smell bad, please just keep it to yourselves. Otherwise, we'd love to hear from you, of course. And that's it. We'll be back at some point. all right, see you. We still don't have a catchphrase for this, so I'm just gonna go with bye.
Subscribe.
Subscribe. That's right.
Thanks so much. Bye bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Paid to Draw. Please don't forget to subscribe to get all the latest episodes and leave a 5-star review. Don't miss out on all the exciting interviews we have coming up.
If you want to follow us on Instagram, you can find us at paid2drawpodcast. I'm at vicuña_illustration.
And I'm at David Leuter. That's at David, LEUTERT.
The music is by Amanda Depp. That's Amanda and DEFF. See you next week.